something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm gonna stay in this town. I'm gonna live in this town. I'm gonna live in Chicago, it's the greatest place around.
The Cubs and Sox are off for the winter, but inside the clubhouse starts the hot stove discussion now. Inside the clubhouse takes a look at which free agents and trades the Cubs and Sox should explore. Will they trade for a top pitcher or player? Is free agency the way the North and South Siders go? You help them make the call. 312-644-6767.
36,000 plus. Watching Josh Hader try to close this one out. Two strikes and nothing to Munoz. He strikes out the side. An immaculate inning for Josh Hader as the Brewers take the third game of the series.
He's certainly nasty. One of the baseball's best closers. That was back in 2019 when Josh Hader was a member of the Brewers, threw an immaculate inning. Was rewarded by the Houston Astros last offseason with a five-year, $95 million contract, Bruce. And look, we've talked about the Cubs' bullpen since you and I have been together. They had 26 blown saves this year. A clear hole on that team all year with the ability to close games. They had 13 blown saves. If you look at their three main closers in the ninth inning, Alzolay, who was hurt most of the year, Hector Neris, who was eventually DFA'd, and then Porter Hodge. Those three combined for 13 blown saves. So, is someone like Josh Hader, and is Josh Hader even available? He's got 4 years, $76 million left on his deal.
Yes, he's available. The Astros have to dump salary. They will not bring back Bregman, most likely, but if they do, they're definitely having to move off of this contract. And what would be more perfect than a closer like a Hader coming to the Chicago Cubs and filling the role that they need to fill for how many years now? It's been a while, again.
Yeah, they've been looking for a closer since Chapman pretty much left.
So, they did a nice job of patching it up toward the end. The Chicago Cubs lost the division in May and June this year, and a lot of it had to do with their bullpen, okay? Certainly their offense was horrible, but their bullpen was definitely not there. As the year moved on, Hoyer and Carter Hawkins did a nice job of picking up pitchers, bringing up guys from the minor leagues, and solidifying that bullpen. But it was a little bit too late at that point. So Josh Hader making $76 million or an average of 19 the rest of the career is a little bit dangerous because he's a fastball pitcher and he's into his early 30s now. So with that in mind, there's a little danger involved. But he was used in a way by the Houston Astros that was not conducive to getting the very best out of Hader last year. He had an 8-8 record. He had an ERA in the threes. But he also had 10 more appearances than he's ever had.
Yep.
More innings than he ever had. Your closer is not supposed to throw 71 innings, okay? So used in a proper way, I don't know. Who used him in a proper way and got the most out of him? Oh, yeah. It was the guy that manages the Chicago Cubs right now.
Hmm.
So I would say that the Chicago Cubs are looking at doing something that they really have not really felt like doing. You know, the Jed Hoyer, Theo Epstein theories of not giving long-term contracts to closers is pretty much part of their great legacy where they have been successful, develop their own guys. I mean, there have been exceptions along the way. Certainly, there have been bumps in the roads when they have had closers for 2 or 3 years that they went out and got. But again, it's an imperfect road that leads to the closer of a game. And I would like them to consider trading for Hader. And I believe from my intel that he will be traded and Cubs should be knocking at the door.
Okay, a couple things here. And the texters are coming in. I'm going to briefly hit these. 708, don't pay for a guy that really only wants to pitch one inning. 217, no. 773, there's no way in hell Hader ends up here. The contract speaks for itself, and it's terrible. My question to everyone, and to you, Bruce, these contracts are earned most of the time. You know who has the most saves in baseball since 2019?
Josh Hader. Yeah.
Josh Hader, correct. And it's really not that close. He almost has 10 more than Kenley Jensen. There's only about five of these types of closers in the game.
The contract will not be for $76 million.
Okay, so they're going to have to eat some. I was just going to set you up with what does a trade for Josh Hader look like?
It involves trading some of your young players in your organization, okay, who are not making money, and you absorbing, what would you say in the marketplace, 65, 70%? How badly do they want to get out of that commitment to Hader?
Okay? And what type of prospect capital? Like,
right.
It's going to be, that's part of the negotiation.
If you're paying $10 million a year for Hader,
yep.
Are Steal. You feeling better about him?
You paid $9 million for Hector Neris.
Right.
So, yeah, the answer should be yes. And if right. I know, yes, 100%. If you're paying $10 million for one of the games, for the best closer in the game in the last 5 years.
And you know, again, you texters, you know, you make great points. We love having you text most of the time when you're not swearing at us. But the reality is what's your plan? Okay?
Yeah, that's the counter.
Right. What is your plan for solidifying the Cubs bullpen? Okay? Making a stronger bullpen. We're watching teams in the playoffs right now. Some of those closers have been developed. Some of them have been purchased, but there is nothing more important in baseball now than having a strong bullpen, a deep bullpen, something that goes six or seven deep. You're watching playoff teams right now with, I would say, at least three out of the four teams that have the best bullpens in baseball. Okay, I would say San Diego had that as well, but they're not in there at the moment. But again, this is the game of baseball right now, closing. Starting is, you still have to have good starters. The Cubs have that. Now they really have to work on the bullpen and being imaginative. Now they're going to have $65 million as a minimum coming off of the books, okay, from what they paid this year. That includes dead contracts from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, leftover contracts. It might be as much as $95 million if Bellinger opts out. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which you expect him to.
Right.
Okay.
So, again, even if the Cubs don't spend into going over the luxury tax, which I'm sure they'd prefer not to, you should have ample money to spend. As Jed Hoyer says, we will spend money, but we want to be intelligent about how we spend it. Now, spending $10 million a year for a Hader for the next 4 years, is that intelligent? Yeah, it'll be really intelligent if it works out. If it doesn't work out, you'd say that was money that was poorly spent. That's the game of baseball. Those are the dice that you have to throw in the game of baseball right now.
Well, you know what hasn't worked out the last few years is what the Cubs have been doing, which is trying to piecemeal it together, which is trying to develop, get these one-year guys. We just talked about 26 blown saves, 13 right there in the ninth inning in the back end. You can't keep doing the same mistake over and over and over again. You talked about the teams that are left. The Guardians were number one in the majors in bullpen ERA. The Dodgers were fourth. The Yankees were sixth. You know who was second? The Milwaukee Brewers. You talked about Council's usage of Josh Hader. Who knows him more than Craig Council? Council knows what's going on. He knows the back end of that bullpen has to be. You look at the top six. It's the Guardians, the Braves, the Brewers, the Dodgers, the Tigers, the Yankees, the Astros. That's not by mistake.
No.
You have to invest in that part of your game. You got to stop throwing money around and saying, well, we spent $240 million. But if you spend it poorly, everyone's sitting here freaking out about a bad contract with Josh Hader. It's only bad if he fails when he's here.
312-644-6767. Get in. We're here for you. We take all calls. it's directed at me or Ryan, if you don't like what you hear, if you like what you hear, we're here for you every Saturday, and we're going to talk to you.
Yeah, I mean, here's the look. The Cubs have what, 7 prospects in the top 100, which to me, my you want good prospects, you want some guys coming, but at some point, you have to pay to play. And if you need to fix your holes, if you're not going to spend the money by, you know, giving Juan Soto $600 million, which we don't expect the Cubs to do, I think there's 2 gaping holes on this club. 2 gaping holes. One is the back end of the bullpen, your closer, a lights-out closer, and a stud bat. You got to get both. You can't say, well, which one do you... The Cubs are not in a position to prioritize one over the other. They need to get both, Bruce, and this is an option for them when the team's going to be slashing payroll, as you mentioned, to get creative and go take on one of the best closers in the game.
So the second week of November starts the general manager's meetings in San Antonio, and you'll hear exactly what you've talked about, Ryan, as reporters from Chicago and around the country talk about the Cubs and the White Sox. You're going to hear about those type of positions, but you're also going to hear that the one thing the Cubs really need to do is get a power arm for the rotation.
Okay.
What would that look like if it is Burns? What would it look like if it is Flaherty? What would it look like if Gerrit Cole opts out of his contract and it's Gerrit Cole? 312-644-6767. Again, you know, the old theory, I said this to counsel toward the end of the year in a group session. I said, there's an old adage in baseball, when you need another hitter, go out and get the best pitcher out there. And he said, where did that old adage come from? I said, well, I made it up about 15 years ago. But I believe that a lot of teams do look at that even though they need a huge hitter in the middle of the lineup, they need a bullpen guy, but having a power arm in the rotation would be something that would really help them out as well.
Okay, are you willing to spend $200+ million? Because there's projections out there for Corbin Burns that don't go below 200 and they go almost north of 300. There's some that think he's getting 8 years. Going 8 years for $280 million?
No, I'm not.
You going 6 years for 200?
I'm going 6 years at 180. Okay.
I think he's gonna get more.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Is there a counsel factor involved, or is it all bottom line?
No, I think that... Look, let's be honest. Wrigley Field's attractive. We've had players, both players with the Cubs and not with the Cubs, say Wrigley Field's the destination in baseball. The Cubs are the destination of baseball. Free agents talk about it. They know it. They're taken care of here. They want a player, the fan base, et cetera, et cetera. I definitely think that all takes into it. At the end of the day, how many players have turned down more money? How many players? Yeah. I mean, we can sit here on one hand.
They don't.
You know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's who wants you? And I'm looking at a deal for 6 for $180, and you're looking at a deal
Wheeler
for 7
turned
for
down
$210.
More money from the White
I knew
Sox.
You were going to bring up Zach Wheeler. So he turned down $7 more million, and he made the right call. But, yes, so he's the one. All right, there's like maybe we could fill
he,
five
he
guys
on make
the
hand. Right call for the White Sox because it would,
made a great
might
call
be
for himself.
Might be a huge different dynamic over there on the south side.
Might is a big, big word because I don't know. If you have a 7 for $210 in front of Corbin Burns and I have a 6 for $180, where's he going?
He's going for the more money.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no question about that. However, there are other alternatives for a power arm for the Chicago Cubs, and one of them might be sitting 8.1 miles south.
Ooh, Garrett Crochet, huh?
Would you make a trade? If you've already alluded to the fact that the Cubs have 7 players in the top 100, okay, of you know, baseball's top prospects, you know, projected by many different people, including our good friend Jim Callis. If that's the case, how many of those would it take to bring a Garrett Crochet to the north side? And would, you know, at this point, do the White Sox care who they trade with as long as they get the best players back?
No. If you care who you trade with still, you're going to be just scraping from the bottom of the barrel time and time and time again. This whole Cubs-Sox can't make a trade is just garbage. Garrett Crochet would be perfect for the Cubs.
They made a big trade in 2017.
They've made big trades. You can count the Kimbrel and Madrigal trade as a big trade. That was a big trade at the time.
It was.
Kimbrel was the biggest biggest closer on the market, and the Sox tried to bring him over. It didn't work for either team. But I think the Cubs do match up with the White Sox. Whether or not the White Sox want to see Crochet go up there and dominate and possibly win World Series and Cy Youngs. But
they have the position players that the White Sox need. Right,
that's
now.
It. So yep. You said, how many does it take? I think it takes at least, like, it depends if you're going with, like, the top, like, Matt Shaw is 22 overall right now on MLB Pipeline. Owen Cassie is 34. Those guys would look really nice in the White Sox future lineup. I could care less where Garrett Crochet goes if it's the best package. And we know that the cupboard is completely bare on the south side in terms of what's coming, especially from an offensive standpoint. Garrett Crochet has to be flipped for bats. The White Sox have pitching coming. They have the top two left-handed prospects in baseball. But you got to find a team that matches up with. I think I've been saying Baltimore for years now. Baltimore, I think, is definitely another team that can show desperation and make a deal.
Chris Getz and Jed Hoyer live in the same neighborhood area, and they're always walking and bumping into each other. It's a great conversation over coffee at whatever the local coffee place is over there. You know, let's have this conversation. And why not? These conversations take place all the time. Do trades take place all the time? No, they don't.
No.
But again, what makes sense for the White Sox is to get back three or four position players on a team that has none, okay? You might say they have a few. I would argue with you, there's, outside of Luis Robert bouncing back.
I would trade him, by the way.
They have very little to offer in the way of anyone that you can project as an above-average player.
I totally agree. And I, to be honest with you, you could make a package to the north side where Luis Robert is playing center field at Wrigley Field. And
the Armstrong fans would not be happy with that.
Well, then put him in right or put him in left. I mean, you have he's a gold glover, you know. Let Armstrong play, let PCA do his thing in center, and you're taking it on 1 year of $15 million for Luis Robert. And the incentive, the package in return, maybe you get three of those top 100 bats.
I think it's 2 years on Robert.
No, it's two option years.
Right.
It's 1 year, $15 million, right. And so you have to buy those out at $2 million each. So it's a $19 million one-year flyer. If he goes and becomes 150-game player and hits 300, then you have the option to pick him up. But basically, it's a one-year, $19 million investment flyer on Luis Robert. And I think if you package him correctly with Garrett Crochet, you could get – all of a sudden now, you're talking about Ballesteros, you know? I think we can live in a world where both sides of town can be happy if Garrett Crochet were traded to the north side and the White Sox have three of the Cubs' top prospects flourishing down south. If it equates the Cubs getting to the 90-win plateau that they talk about and being in the – I'd rather be sitting here a year from now with you talking about the Cubs in the NLCS down 3-1.
You know, who would have thought in 2017 you trade Jose Quintana, who's pitching for the Mets in the playoffs.
Like key innings and like really good.
And you're trading Cease and you're trading Eloy. And Eloy is the centerpiece of that deal. And he's back to being
a minor league deal guy.
He will be a minor league deal guy for somebody.
That's unreal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a fact.
It's the fate of baseball. You know, 7 years later, and these are still young guys. I mean, you know, all these, you know, Quintana's an old guy, but he's, even though he got beat the other night, he pitched as well as he possibly could. You're going up against a Dodger lineup that's probably the most patient and deep of any in baseball right now, and they're actually peaking. Even in a game they lost yesterday and got killed in the first three innings, they made it interesting by putting up points on the board.
Well, he saved their season just a start prior to that. So, yeah, I mean, we have it, like, the idea of not trading with the Cubs. I think I would hope, Bruce, that's a thing of the past. I would hope.
I don't think that's going to bother Chris Getz or Jerry Reinsdorf.
I do think prior to winning the World Series, I do believe this, and I've heard a little bit of that, the idea of letting one of their players go win a title up there was a thing. Now, I think because both sides of town have had parades in the last 20 years, we can let that go. And there's been multiple trades since 2017, and most of them have just flattened out to
nothing. Listen to what
you
just said. Oh, yeah, we had championship in the last 20 years. Oh, geez. Is that we were talking about make Chicago great. You know, it's like, you know, this is.
I mean, next year's the 20th.
We should be demanding more of Chicago baseball.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When Tom Hamilton comes on and says 14 times to the postseason for the Cleveland Guardians, and I'm sitting here trying to combine two franchises, I don't think there's been 14 playoff appearances combined ever. It's a joke. It's a joke. That's conversations like this every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Bruce Levine. And I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse. We have just a Chicago staple coming up, Bruce, at the bottom of the hour here. Ned Colletti, did you know, and this is a trivia question for the fans, the highest winning percentage of any GM in the National League during his tenure with the Dodgers during that 10-year stretch. Ned Colletti, as the Dodgers, with Michael Kopech, are one win away from another World Series appearance. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
There's a shot, right center field, and Ohtani lights the fire. A leadoff home run. Dodgers 1, Mets nothing in game 4.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Super Freak Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers are just one win away from going to the World Series for the first time since 2020 when they won the World Series in that COVID shortened season. That one counts. Let me ask you a question. No, real quick. Would it count in Chicago?
You going to make Ned hold?
Would it count? Ask Ned if it counts. Well, ask Ned if it counts. Yeah, heck yeah.
Let's would it go count in Chicago? No.
It would count in Chicago. No. Are you kidding me? We just talked about
60 games.
Oh, my God, Bruce. Well, let's get to the Score Hotline, which is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And Bruce and I always love bringing on Chicago guys. And this is one of the greats, Ned Colletti. He was the Dodgers general manager from 05 to 14, and he had the highest winning percentage of any GM in the National League during that time. And we are pleased to be joined by Ned now as the LA Dodgers are just a win away from going back to the World Series. How are you doing this morning, Ned?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. Good to be on with you. You're sitting next to one of the most enterprising people I've ever met in my life, Mr. Levine.
Well, yeah, I'm just writing.
He's a beauty.
I'm just writing. He's a beauty. Is that quotations that you just put? Did you put beauty in quotes there?
He's one of the best.
Well, Ned, we love having you on the show, and obviously out west, the Dodgers and everyone here is just envious of the idea of being in postseason baseball right now. But what they've been doing, to take last night out of the equation, but the way that they've just been absolutely annihilating offensively the Mets. I mean, at one point, I think they had outscored them 40-9 prior to last night. What about the Dodgers and this Dodgers team has impressed you most as they sit just a win away from the World Series?
Well, I've watched many Dodger teams. I've been with the organization 17 years and built about 9 or 10 of them. They played since game 4 of the first round against San Diego when they were down 2-1. Somebody in that clubhouse decided it was time to get fierce and it was time to get really, really driven to be as great as they can be. And it's been a change in attitude, I think. I think it's been a change in approach. I think they were heading to yet another, for them, a first-round loss, and they picked it up. They have great talent. They have a pitching staff that has been battered all season long from injury. But you get to the postseason, you just need outs. But they have talent, they have execution, they have experience. And now I think they have an extra degree of fierceness. I don't know who beats them, although the pitching situation for every team is a bit of a mixed bag right now. But I think that they are easily the best team in baseball.
Ned, a pleasure to have you on, my friend. And when you talk about pitching this time of year and you talk about bullpens that are being worn down and being seen more often by the same team that they do during the regular season, it's a game sometimes I have a hard time identifying what I'm watching because of the prolific amount of bullpen guys being the dominant pitchers on a team. How do you view baseball now yourself And how do you get your head around how these people try to get through a game and win one?
Well, I'm actually glad I don't have to try and figure that out because, you know, you used to really develop your starting pitching. And it all began there. And, you know, it used to begin with guys that would go 8 sometimes 9, then 7 sometimes 8, then 6 innings sometimes 7, now 5 innings sometimes 6, really kind of 4 innings sometimes 5. So the amount of pitching that you need, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's not just this time of the year either. You look back at a season now, how many complete games are thrown? How many pitchers that are going to have Hall of Fame votes, except for closers, have ever pitched a ninth inning?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very, very limited number of appearances and sometimes the most crucial inning of a game. It's just a different way of doing it. You know, I always thought that the postseason, though, was really about buying outs. And I think as you look back at even some of the Cub teams, like the 84 team that as they celebrated this past year, San Diego beat that team with their starting pitching, who didn't start games, pitching 2 or 3 innings in the middle of the game.
Right.
They fell behind. They ended up changing pitchers in the 3rd or 4th inning, and somebody else go 3 or 4. So this is not necessarily uncommon. It's just that it is so prevalent now. You know, the Dodgers got a game 6. Who's starting? Well, one of their relievers. You know, it's a game of relief pitching.
And on top of that, Ned, yesterday, Dave Roberts had a stick with a starter that couldn't pitch. He was toast from the beginning, but he understood he had a bullpen game today. And that if he went to the bullpen to try to win that game that was getting out of hand there, he would be maybe sitting with a tie at 3 games apiece. You know, as you went home to the Dodgers, you know, and it's a fascinating thing to look at.
Yeah, and you know, as I look at all these games, I mean, the Dodgers have won big, Dodgers have lost big, won big far more than lost big in the last week or so. The Cleveland New York series, I mean, where is the pitching there?
Yeah,
you know, it's like, where is the bullpens there? They just get to the second half of their games and they just, not a game start. You know, it's like now you're going to have 5 or 10 runs scored in the last 3 or 4 or 5 innings. It's exciting, I guess, for a GM. I don't know how exciting it would be. I think you'd be constantly looking around, seeing who's you know, arm is dragging and who can get somebody out in a key spot. And who's anxious and who's not? You know, you see a lot of guys swinging at pitches out of the zone this time of year. But it's remarkable. It's still a great spectacle, just painted in a different way.
I want to ask you a question that kind of what we're dealing with a little bit here in Chicago with RSNs and TV contracts and how it affects and impacts building a roster. And obviously with it in LA, the pressure's always on to win. You did a lot of winning. You spent a lot of money too out there. But what's the luxury as a GM to? And this is what a lot of fans don't get. Like when you're getting that TV revenue, how much does a television contract impact how you're able to build a winning roster?
Well, it's that's a great question. And my first 5 or 6 years, we did not have that. My first 5 or 6 years, our payroll was in the middle of Major League Baseball, maybe in the upper half, but certainly not where it's been since Guggenheim Group took over. Money is great because if you have injuries or there's somebody you really want to get, you just go get them. That's the way the Dodgers approach it. That's the way Mark Walter approaches it. But it's not just the money. It's when I think of Mark Walter, who I worked for as a GM for 3 years and then did TV for him for another 6 or 7. His appetite for victory, his quest to be the best at everything he does, that's also a piece of it. Money just can't buy you something, okay, in the world of sports. You've got to have the attitude and the aptitude and your own fierceness in order to win. There's a lot of money in the game, okay? There's a lot of powerful RSN deals out there. Is everybody doing what the Dodgers are doing? I don't think so. So if that just takes the money, it does help. But you got to have ownership and leadership that is smart with how they spend it and just relentless in their pursuit. Not just throwing it everywhere, but figuring out who are the people you really know can play in your town, can play with the culture that you've developed, can expand your culture, can expand your bandwidth of championship caliber baseball, and then you go get them. And that's what they do. When they got beat last year in the first round, people said, are they going to sign Ohtani? Are they going to sign Yamamoto? Are they going to get any more pitching? I said, yes, yes, and yes. Well, how do you know that? Because I know they have the power of their RSN money, but I also know the character of the people who are in charge of doing it. They were not going to take another year of defeat. And so what did they do? Ohtani, Yamamoto, Glasnow, and off they go. So it's more than money. It's also the attitude and the approach. Money gives you the chance, but the attitude and the approach will take you over the line.
So it's January of 2025, spring training is just about to begin, and you're sitting down with the greatest player in maybe since, who knows, Babe Ruth, who knows, Ty Cobb, with Shohei Ohtani, and he's ready to pitch again. But you've already got the greatest hitter, the greatest impact guy in the game. He's doing exactly what you wanted him to do. And your conversation turns to, Mr. Ohtani, do you really still want to pitch? Is there a up and a downside for Ned Coletti on whether or not Ohtani tries to pitch again?
Well, I think there's two things I would start with. One is your medical staff. Their lead orthopedic surgeon, Neil Ellitross, is one of the best in the world. I would have to sit with Neil for a while, and I'm sure that they have already, and really go over the risk that is involved. You don't want this player missing any time for any type of injury. The bat, the mind, the running ability is just too far off the chart to lose any of that. And then I need a conversation with him and see what he really wants to do and to try and eliminate the ego, if there is, or whatever, and really get to the bottom of it. And you know what? There's other ways to do this, too. It doesn't have to be every fifth or every sixth day. It can be different. It can be this guy is fine-tuned, okay? He works like crazy. He throws, he will throw a lot. He's thrown a lot already this past season trying to rehab. But there may be other ways of utilizing his arm besides having him start every sixth day. I think they're trying to go to a six-man rotation in the event that he is part of it. Another change in the game. But I think you don't know the answer today. I think it's leadership's responsibility in any situation to gather as much information as you can before you have to make a decision. And most people in life will decide if what they thought was a good decision or a bad decision by how it came out. I think that might be half of it. I think the other half is when you make that decision, is this as important as a decision you make? I think they've got months to make it, and I think that they'll do a lot of due diligence to get to the right answer. And whatever they decide initially doesn't mean it's not going to be adjusted as time goes on. Sports is a constant adjustment. And the teams that do it best are willing to adjust and have more than one plan.
Ned, you said something interesting within all the other things that you pointed out so well. And that is, you ask the player what he wants to do. Baseball has changed. And the players in the game, Ned, have changed. And, the society, it's no longer my way or the highway. What do you think about general managing and running teams, even being managers, compared to maybe 15 years ago and how different that might be?
Well, it is totally different in a lot of different ways. I think the front office and the players have more control than it probably ever did. And the manager probably has the least amount of control of the three groups. Manager, he used to give him the team and help him give you some insight as to who he liked, who he didn't like before you acquired. But, you know, they manage a game. They manage a team. They manage nine innings, and then they manage from the last pitch on Wednesday to the first pitch on Thursday, the ego and the conversations. Now I think there's so many different aspects that feed into it that it has changed. It has changed drastically. You know, Bruce, you and I have been around the game for a long, long time, okay? There's been, and I don't know how you feel about it, there's been a manager or two that's been hired that I had to look them up. You know, I don't know who this person was.
Right.
And, you know, going back to when we were young people thinking about working in sport and then having a chance to do it, you knew everybody. There was no surprise. There might have been a surprise hire between two candidates, but you never had to look somebody up to find out, well, who's this guy that's just got the managing job at XYZ team?
Well, right? You have to ask the metrics guys whether you should hire him or not.
No, exactly. So, you know, it has changed a lot. I think the teams that are the most successful, like any other part of life, the more balance you have, the better chance you got of getting it right.
Well,
but I think there's balance.
The great Ned Coletti, we appreciate you, as always, is hopping on. I wanted to ask you one quick question. You can be a one-word answer, because we didn't ask you the question when we brought you on. Did the 2020 World Series count for the LA Dodgers?
Well, it was the only World Series they played that year. They had an extra round. They had all sorts of different things they had to jump through. You said one word? Okay, I've surpassed that by a lot.
Yes, Bruce, it counts.
Yes, it counts.
It absolutely
counts.
It counts. Ned, we really appreciate you joining us, as always, and keep on keeping on, my friend. We'll have you on again down the line.
Okay.
Thank you, buddy.
Great to be with you guys. Take care.
Take care.
The Score has you covered with great football action all week, and tonight, number one Texas hosts number five Georgia in a huge SEC showdown that I'll be watching. Pregame coverage begins at 6. Then tomorrow, you can hear the Jaguars and Patriots from London starting at 8:15 a.m., then the Jets and Steelers on Sunday Night Football starting at 6:30. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. We'll be back to wrap things up on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Download the Odyssey app, search for 670 The Score, and tap follow to receive alerts on our Bears coverage. And if you can't get enough, check out the Take the North podcast with Mark Brody and Dan Wiederer, breaking down the biggest storylines ahead of next week's showdown against the Commanders. Follow Take the North on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And Bruce, as we wrap things up here, the White Sox still don't have a manager. There's going to be a lot of things happening as soon as the World Series goes final in terms of baseball and free agency. But what do you have a timeline in terms of the White Sox hiring their next manager?
I think it's possible in between the ALCS and NLCS that the White Sox could talk to somebody like Clayton McCullough, the first base coach of the Dodgers, and they could make a hire by then. I know it was a priority for Chris Getz to have somebody in place by the end of October. That might be early November now with the World Series going into that. But again, keep your eye on McCullough, still a top-rated guy that people – he's the first base coach of the Dodgers that both the Marlins and the Chicago White Sox certainly have high on their list. As I said, George Lombard, a coach, as well as Will Venable, have already interviewed for the White Sox job.
A lot of big things in baseball coming. We have Cody Bellinger. We'll have a decision after the World Series. Then it's going to be the GM meetings. And then from there, Bruce, we know it's a snowball effect into the winter meetings as free agency and trades will be happening left and right.
Unless I get fired, I'll see you next Saturday.
Unless I get fired, I'll see you next Saturday as well, my friend. We thank Ned Coletti and Tom Hamilton for joining us for all the texts, the calls, Tyler behind the glass. It's been another great edition of Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. Terry Francona, the new manager of the Cincinnati Reds, joins us next week on Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. Steve Rosenblum up next.